Welcome to the Sunday Morning Linux Review with Matt Enders, Tony Bemis, and Mary Tomich.
This is episode 65.
Matt's lack rack.
Matt's lack rack?
Lack rack.
So is that a rack of lack things?
Snack rack.
No, lack. No, no, no.
Okay, well, what is that for those of us who are ignorant?
IKEA has these tables called lacks. They have a end table version and a coffee table version. And if you go on the internet and search for lack rack, there are people who have made racks out of them for server equipment.
Okay.
And because they fit a server, like a rack mount server, goes right in between the legs perfectly.
Oh, wow.
And I was going to make one with the regular lack table, the end table, but it didn't. I'm mounting servers, and four of them I'm mounting, along with a switch. And all the stuff...
I'm trying to picture you pushing a cart around IKEA.
I didn't. I walked in the out, because they're right near the exit. I walked in the out, and I stood there in front of them for a while, figured out which one I was going to buy.
Yeah.
I bought the coffee table one, because the coffee table one comes with a shelf in it.
Okay, that you can then set them on. More
right.
servers in
but there. But the jig that you get with it, to mark where you're going to put the holes in the legs to put the shelf, doesn't leave you enough room.
So it's not pre-drilled. You
right,
select.
Right, right, right.
Okay.
Well, it's a jig so that you put it in the same place.
Oh, I was going to say because...
But it's not pre-drilled.
You'd want to make sure you measure that twice so you'd only have to drill once.
Right. But it's a jig.
Okay.
So
it's already pre-drilled.
So what I did was I altered the jig
to
give myself another 2 or 3 inches so I could get some more
Good
servers in there.
Yeah, cool.
All right, so now we know.
That's what I did yesterday.
So I saw the picture with your coffee maker. Is that on top of your rack?
No, no, no. That's on the table next to my laptop.
Oh.
The rack is to the left of that table.
All right.
Okay.
And when I'm done with it, I'm in the process of... I'm making pictures of the whole process, except I forgot to take pictures of it with the shelf installed before I put a server on it. So, but... It's got one server on it now, and I'm going to get three more and a switch on it today, and then I'll get those pictures posted.
Okay. Well, we'll be...
And my work story of the week. Do you want my work story?
Wait. I got a question about your rack.
Oh, okay. Go ahead.
So you want the coffee maker. Is it because it's tall, or the coffee...
The coffee table.
Because it's taller, or...
No, because it's got a shelf in it.
That's the only difference is the shelf?
Yeah. It's deeper.
Were you listening, Tony?
It supports the whole... It's
deeper. Okay.
It's deeper, so it gets the whole length of it, and it's got a shelf there that you can sit them right on.
And that's where that jig came into play.
Yes.
Okay.
It was changing the height of that shelf.
We've come full circle.
Yes.
All right, what's your work story?
Moving on. I was doing an rsync at work, right? And we've got these instructions. And I use the instructions just to copy and paste the command so I don't have to type them in, right?
Oh, okay.
Because
you need certain parameters set.
Right. And I set the server up out on the workbench and turned on SSH so that I could SSH into it from my laptop in the office and sit down. And I couldn't get it to work. It kept telling me the drive was mounted. I'm like, I know it's not. I kept doing unmount, and I kept rebooting it, and then I have to go out and set SSH up all over again because it's a live USB, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm banging my head on this for 45 minutes.
Figuratively
right?
speaking,
Couldn't figure it out.
Everybody's...
Why? It's just mounted, mounted. I'm like, I just rebooted. I know it's not mounted. So I went and got the other guy that was working, Eric. I said, Eric, you got to come. I need another set of eyes on this. And I said, see, SDB is unmounted. But then when I paste in this command, it says that it's mounted and it can't do the RC.
Were you SSH into the right machine?
Oh. And he goes, well, you're making sure SDB's unmounted, but the command's saying SDA. Because there are just generic commands in the guide.
Sure, you gotta change
it. It depends on how
the drive.
If the USB drive is in the back of the machine, it mounts the hard drives second. So they're SDB. And if it's in the front of the machine, it mounts them first and they're SDA.
The life learning lesson at work.
Jeez, 45 minutes.
Oh my gosh.
Wow.
Yeah.
Thanks, Eric. Because he listens to the show. So.
Okay. Yeah, thanks for helping Matt out, Eric.
I'm brain dead.
Huh.
Well, you're making sure SDB's unmounted, but you're issuing the command on SDA.
Yeah, it kind of reminded me of that immutable, you know, that attribute thing I talked about last week, where I could get all these files to go, you know, to delete them all very easily, and then this one, I just couldn't, it just wasn't doing it, and then,
I remember what it was.
It didn't take me 45 minutes.
I wasn't,
it's just one of those things.
It didn't take me 45 minutes. I wasn't to the point of doing the rsync yet, I was still making the file system on the new drives, and I was trying to do the makefs, and it just wouldn't do it, because it said it was mounted. Because I was trying to make an FSS on the USB drive.
Hey, speaking of rsync, are we going to talk about that
later.
Now or later? Okay, we'll talk about it later. So, Tony, what's up with you? What kind of techie stuff did you do this past week?
I cleaned up my room a little bit. Cleaned my basement.
And we appreciate that.
Techie stuff.
Yeah.
Mary brought me a Raspberry Pi so I can play with hers. And I took OpenELEC and put it on an SD card.
Great.
Yeah. So I'm going to, and OpenELEC is that OS or Linux distro that has XBMC built into it. And then they have just images that you can just copy it onto the drive, or onto the flash drive.
Yeah.
Or SD card. And then it's ready to boot and ready to go.
Yeah. So, and I'm happy to, you know, I'm happy to provide that to you for testing, and, you know, maybe selling it to you. I don't know, but if it works so well, I may just say, Tony, but the nice thing is that you can test it out with having to invest the money in one. So
yeah.
I'm happy to do that, because perhaps I'll benefit too from it.
Yeah.
Maybe, you know, I don't know, but
maybe, yeah.
Anyway, so, well, good. What I did is, well, aside from, you know, just doing distro review, blah, 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 that, you know, type show prep stuff, I've always been interested in OCR conversion. I was introduced to it when I was in the Air Force Reserve, and I worked in the communications center in the late 80s. And messages would, you know, they'd be couriered to the comm center, and then we'd scan them and transmit them for the author. The OCR machine we used at the time was gigantic and required that the message be typed. It had to be typed in a specific font, you know, those OCR fonts, if you remember that from, you know, way back when. And then the message itself had to be positioned with precision so that the scanning red light of the OCR reader would scan down the line. Because if it was skewed, you know, it's going to misread it and create all sorts of problems. It might say, bomb them now instead of bomb them not. All right, so that's a funny little joke. Or maybe not. But anyway, so of course, you know, getting into open source software in Linux, I just thought, you know, what's out there as far as OCR software goes, for the Linux aficionado. Well, as it turns out, you know, there are several options for Linux users who want to convert image text to ASCII text. Now, the tool I looked at a long time ago was Tesseract, which is really, it was initially a commercial OCR engine that was developed by Hewlett-Packard. Now, I've used Hewlett-Packard products, scanners, for a long time, and so who knows, when I was in the Windows world, you know, on my personal stuff, I was probably using Tesseract embedded in their scanner. But yeah. Anyway, it's an OCR engine, so it itself does not have a front end. But what I found out this past week is that there is I'll call it a GUI / front end for it. And the nice thing about it is that it allows you to make use of Tesseract. Tesseract will take files that, let's say that, for example, you've got some text on your screen, and you maybe save the image, it's going to take that. If it's a JPEG, it's going to convert it to TIFF, and then it's going to OCR it. and the nice thing about it, and this is, I think it's Tesseract, I think it's GTK or GUI. You know, and I don't have it on here. Tesseract-GUI. I'm going to have a link to it in the show notes for anybody who wants to try it. And again, it's just a bare bones front end, but it's just what I need. And I tested it out. I found out that if you're going to take a screenshot of a document that has the autocorrect on, you know, the little red squiggly lines underneath it, that's going to screw up the OCR big time. So I turned that off, and wow, it did a really great job. I'm also going to include a link to some OCR software comparison. There's several different engines out there, and so I'm going to include that in the show notes for anyone who's interested. Yeah, maybe I'm the only one who is, but I think maybe others might be a little interested in that. So that's what I played around with this week. So, enough of me.
Cool.
How about you, Tony?
Actually, there's one other thing I did.
Back to you.
I had upgraded my laptop about a month ago.
Yeah.
They just did a disk upgrade.
Mm-hmm.
And it screwed up Some things really bad. Other things seemed to work okay. But the big problem was Audacity kept on crashing, so I couldn't use my laptop to edit anymore. So this week, I went through and did a wipe and reload. Mm-hmm. 15 minutes to get the base OS installed. It was that. I mean, that was pretty fast. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, and that's... And then, you know, that's Mint, so there's a lot of stuff in there. It's not just like if you're installing Windows and have very few programs available to you. So that's nice. And then it took about a half hour to download and install updates. And then another 15 minutes to install my top 10 programs that I use. So within an hour,
give
I had...
Give us a list. Give us your top 10 list.
My top 10.
What didn't come with the distro?
Yeah.
Audacity.
Yeah, I figured Audacity.
Okay, yeah, Audacity
Evolution.
Makes sense.
It wasn't part of the distro.
No. Huh. No, way. They use... there's something else. I don't know if it was Thunderbird that's installed. And then...
Well, Evolution is a kind of a pig.
Yeah, but I like it.
Okay.
It's especially if you've been used to Outlook, mm-hmm. Evolution is the tool.
Yeah. Well, it has all the filters and stuff that I like. It's nice.
It's very similar to Outlook.
Features.
Yeah. No, yeah. I used to use it. I just decided not to use it.
Yeah.
But that's just my own.
Well, I stopped using any mail client at all. I just used the web interface.
Okay. Yeah. And then Chrome and the Google Plus or the Google Voice plugin. What else? Conky.
Well, of course, Conky. You get that tricked out desktop.
And got that backup running.
Good.
Skype. Okay. What else? GNUcache.
Okay.
Cheese. It already had VLC installed, so I didn't have to install that.
Mm-hmm. Do you have a built-in webcam?
No.
That's enough.
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. So it was very convenient to get it back up and running, and then the next day I went through and copied all my stuff back in, set up all the programs. So it was less painful than what I thought it would be. It worked out really nice.
Oh, that's important. All right, well, I guess we've kind of... Oh, are you going to say something else?
In the IRC chat, there's Cran. Mm-hmm. Just got in. He says he worked out how to play the live feed from YouTube.
Yeah.
For the non-freedom haters.
It's really cool how he does it.
Oh, all right.
He uses YouTube DL, which is I have that installed too. It allows you to download YouTube videos, and he downloads it to a file and then plays the file after a bit of it is downloaded so that it's downloading and playing it.
Oh, okay.
So DL is kind of like the buffering.
Yeah,
right.
All right. Very good. So that's, I think we've kind of pretty much caught up with what we've all been up to since the last episode. So we'll go ahead and move on to...
Matt, what's happening with the kernel?
And in the kernel this week, there's not much because we're still on holiday season, kind of. But there is an RC and there is a stable update. On Wednesday, the 2nd of January, 2013, at 19:36 Pacific Standard Time, Linus Torvalds released kernel 3.8-RC2, and here's what he said about it. It's a new year. People are getting back to work and trying desperately to forget the overeating that has been going on for the last 2 weeks. And hey, to celebrate, here's RC2. The patch is fairly small and largely dominated by the GPU updates and the trivial removal of dev init exit in the I2C layer. But there's some file system work, ext4, ecryptfs, ceph, and some VM fixes in there too. And some late ARM OMAP cleanups. So go test. Then the mainline is still 3.7. And in stable updates, we have one stable update from Ben Hutchings, who on Friday, the 4th of January, at 2013, at 1:17 in the morning, Greenwich Mean Time, released kernel 3.2.36, with 187 files changed, 1,628 lines inserted, and 923 lines deleted. And our developer quote of the week comes from Theodore Sal, and he says, "A lot of SD and micro SD cards out there are crap, driven by low prices rather than quality. Here are some good hints for how to check low-end flash devices for sanity before you put precious data on them and before you blame the file system for a problem caused by a crap storage device. Because Theodore Sal is the maintainer of the EXT4 file system in the kernel.
Oh. So, Tony, we better take notes here, you know, as far as it relates to cards and the Raspberry Pi.
Yeah. And
so that $2 card is going to have to go.
There'll be a link to the actual blog post he's referring to for that information.
All right.
So that's all I have for the kernel.
Well, you know, and just to comment on that a little bit, over the last couple of years, the price of storage has, well, everybody knows it's gone down, I'll say precipitously, because it just seems to have gotten very inexpensive. And I look at those micro cards that will store 32 gigabytes on them. I'm thinking, how in the world do they do that? Now, we don't need to go into any discussion here about that, but it's just amazing.
It's my, and you can get them up to 64 gigs on those little micro SD cards.
That's crazy.
It is crazy.
Yeah.
I mean, but they must compress the heck
imagine
out of
the
it.
Amount of data. And you remember, like, when hard drives, big clunky hard. Yes. I remember buying my first hard drive.
500 megabyte.
20 megs. My first hard drive was 20 megs.
Yeah, my first one, I think, was 26 megs or something. And it was, like, three times the size of the normal hard drive today. You know, it was like, that big. Mm-hmm. It was, like, this big.
Yeah.
I don't remember mine being huge like that, but...
Yeah.
But, yeah.
The first one I ever bought was 500 megabytes, and it cost $300. And... It was, my first foray into putting something into a computer that didn't come with it.
Right.
Yeah, just amazing. It is amazing. So.
Anyway. Yeah, I bought mine used, and I think I paid $100 for.
Okay.
For a 20 meg drive.
Yeah. Oof.
All right. So that's the kernel news.
Cool.
Tony, what's going on with the Linux distributions this week?
All right, so last week we left off with Gparted. So on the same day,
parting was such. Sweet
We had on the same day on the 30th, we had Agilia Linux 8.1.1, and they're Russian Slackware based, right?
Yeah, well, they originated from Slackware, and the reason I know that is because this is the distro I'm going to be reviewing
they're
this week.
They're from who?
Agilia used to be MOPS Linux, a MOPS project, before it became Agilia, and or I'm calling it Agilia, maybe Agilia, but anyway, yeah, it originated. Their distro originated from Slackware. That's what they use as their base, but now they are their own self now. But anyway,
cool. Yeah, so we'll hear a lot more about it with your review. Thank you, Mary.
You will. You bet.
All right, and then we have FreeBSD 9.1 was released on the New Year's Eve.
Yeah, that's kind of funny there, too, because their release was accidentally delayed because somebody, I just didn't flip the right switch.
Oh, yeah.
And PCBSD 9.1 actually came out first.
Right.
Yeah, we talked about that last week, and now, so here it is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
And then on the first, we have Parsix GNU Linux 4.0 Release 1. And Parsix is a Debian based on their testing branch with GNOME 3.
Oh, okay.
Simplice Linux 3.0.0 was released again, it's based on Debian, but it's based, they're using the unstable branch with OpenBox as the desktop. And that was on the second. On the third,
OpenBox and the download is 3 gigs.
3 gigs, wow.
Yeah, so just wanted to mention that.
Are you sure?
No, on here it's saying it's 500 megs.
Ultimate Edition, is that where we are?
No,
that was someplace.
Disregard. I'll pay better attention.
All I'm right. Like, what is she looking at?
Obviously,
someplace
not the
is like a lightweight Linux.
Oh, I'm sorry, Tony.
It's all right.
I didn't mean to screw up your distros.
All right. Well, we have the Ultimate Edition.
Okay, there we go.
What's on the third? Yes, with 3.5. And they're Ubuntu-based with KDE as the desktop. And that's the 3-gig download.
Mm-hmm.
3.3.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
Yeah. Also on the third, we have Slacks 7.0.3. And that's their updated version of the Slackware-based Live CD.
Yeah, which came out a week after 7.0.2, which is the one that I attempted to.
I wonder if they fixed that create the flash drive problem.
Well, it is. It's got to be a minor bug fix release. So
yeah, maybe that was it. I don't know.
It says it supports PXE booting now.
Mm-hmm.
That's cool.
PXE booting.
Yeah. Anyway, then on the third, the last one on the third was Snow Linux 4. They're the Debian-based distro with Mate as the desktop. Or they also have, Mate, which is that GNOME 2.
It's the re-implementation of GNOME 2, yeah.
Right.
Mate.
Mate, that's right, yeah.
Mate. We're Americans.
I know that's our problem.
We're Americans.
We're Americans. All right. Let's wave our flag. Mine is a penguin on it. All right, so, and then
the last one for the week was released on the 4th, which is Body Linux 2.2.0.
Mm-hmm.
They're Ubuntu-based with Enlightenment as the desktop.
Yeah, and are you done talking about them?
You go ahead.
I was going to say, it's kind of interesting about this release of Bodai, is that this is their first released images that are hybrid ISO images, and what that means is that you can write the image directly to the flash drive simply by using DD, and it will become a bootable media. So,
cool.
Maybe something, some little exercise to try to see how that works out.
Yeah.
I've had trouble doing that in the past. Maybe it'll work for this. So just wanted to. Yeah. Okay. Press those links.
We got to hit the refresh.
Uh-huh.
All right. Number 5 is Body with 1495.
And trending up.
Number 4 is Ubuntu with 1701.
And trending up.
And number 3, sneaking into that third position, was Snow Linux 1783.
And trending up. You can definitely tell what two distributions on that list releases this week, because they're never there any other time.
Well, exactly.
Yeah, and I checked, actually, Snow Linux, they release every couple weeks, it seems, at least recently.
Yeah. And then on the second, we have Magia with 2069.
And trending up.
And in number 1 spot is Mint. I gotta love that minty goodness.
Yeah, I was just gonna say, gotta love that minty goodness. Especially you now, Tony, with
that's
the new
right.
install.
I do. And that's 3588.
And trending down.
All right.
Okay.
Mary, what's on SDA6 this week?
I'll tell you what's on SDA6. Although I think it turned out, because I installed it several times, it went from SDA 6 to SDA 7 because I think I deleted the partition and they got reorganized. So anyway, but it went back and forth. So, but this week's review is of I'm going to call it a Julia Linux, for lack of a better way to pronounce it. It's a Russian distribution, the download of which at 3 gigabytes rivaled the size of another Russian product, War and Peace, the novel War and Peace. I mean, it was huge. According to their site, a Julia Linux is maintained by a small team of independent developers in their spare time. The entire site is in Russian, so I Google translated it to get a better understanding of this distro. However, you know that something was lost in the translation when the purpose of Agilia Linux was to, as translated, design for an advanced but lazy audience. That's what it said. Do you think they really meant a smart and efficient audience?
No.
I'm not sure, but let's take a look at the vitals. The name, of course, is Agilia Linux, and as I said earlier, it's maintained by a small group of dedicated Russian developers. The distro's latest birthday, 8.1.1, was on December 30th, 2012, as we just saw. It's a derivative of, originally based on Slackware. It was called Mops Linux before becoming Agilia, but now it's kind of, it's more its own self now than really a Slackware-based distro. The kernel in this edition was 3.6.11, and the review desktop was Fluxbox, GNOME, and KDE. So I was a busy girl this week. No, actually, GNOME GNOME comes with the live install, and then I went ahead and when I installed it, I installed Fluxbox, and then I installed it again with KDE. I tried to reinstall Fluxbox again. I ran into problems, but we'll get into that in a minute. All right, well, I'll keep going. One of the first things you'll notice about Agilia Linux, at least I did, is that it uses OpenRC as an alternate init system to boot, rather than systemd or init. Got to be in it to win it. Now, OpenRC is a dependency-based init system that works with the system-provided init program, which is normally, I believe, it's SBIN init, but they use that. Now, the reason why I noticed that is because the system hung a couple times during the boot process, and it said OpenRC, or it had the little, I'll say copyright line, but it just indicates that, you know, it
well,
was...
When you're watching the boot process, mm-hmm. the last line you see is not what it's hung on. The last line you see is the last action it completed, and what it's hung on is the next action that you can't see. That's why you have to look at the log file.
Right, but I think it was still as part of the OpenRC process. But yeah, there's something in there, and it was right after I want to say UDEV was invoked. Something along there. But anyway, that's the reason why I noticed OpenRC. So I thought, wow, I've not really seen that before. I'm going to look it up. And that was just a little bit of info. I'm also including a link to some more information about OpenRC. But Agilia boots to a GNOME desktop with a theme as gray and mundane as a cloudy Russian winter. This GNOME desktop has no panel at the top. Everything needed for your session is located in the panel at the bottom of the screen. The graphics that were loaded were Nouveau, of course, the open source NVIDIA driver, and that worked fine. And then also the wireless worked just fine. It loaded IWL 4965. And again, getting my wireless hooked up and working was absolutely no problem at all. Now, the defaults that come with the live environment, there's the browser is Aurora, and that's in Fluxbox. Actually, these defaults include the live environment and the installed environment. But Aurora is in Fluxbox, Firefox is included in Fluxbox, GNOME, and KDE, and Conker is included if you install the KDE desktop with this distro. Now the Office Suite. Now in the live version, LibreOffice is available for download and install from the package manager, but it's not installed by default, which makes sense, you know, from the live environment. But it does come installed automatically installed, of course, when you install this distro using the KDE desktop. The mail client is ClauseMail. Now it's located in the network category on the launcher menu. The file manager was PCFM, and then of course in KDE it's Dolphin. And then you can always use Conker as a file manager if you wish. And then the package manager is MPKG, MPackage.
Yeah, I was going to ask about package management because Slackware doesn't have package management in by default, but you can add a package manager in, and you have a couple to choose from.
That's right, which is why I'll never review Slackware.
Yeah, come on, you got to do it, Mary.
Well, you know, I've still got that open project Linux from scratch.
You can cheat and use Slapget and just not tell us.
But that wouldn't be honest. But I'll write that down. Anyway, so Agilia's panel at the bottom of the screen. Handled the desktop pager in an interesting way, because normally on these live CDs you'll have a desktop pager for the four desktops by default. Or rather than, and I took screenshots of all this, so there's a lot of screenshots in this distro this week. But rather than just have the four desktops as desktops through one through four, they were named Sys, Web, IM, and Dev. And what I thought was kind of nice about that is instead of just one through four, you then would know that if you decided to use more than one desktop, that this one is more maybe web development based, this one is more system based.
Now, do you use more than one desktop in your regular everyday-to-day use of the computer?
No.
I don't either. I've turned all my window managers down to just have one desktop because that's all I ever use. These guys who use like five and six different desktops, and I don't understand what the workflow, why they do that.
I think it might be practical if you're doing, let's say you're doing a lot of development and you want to have these various tools and various file, or access to various files and folders and things, have that all set up. But then I've also been looking at KDE activities because there's some overlap as far as concept goes and how those things are used. At some point when I've got enough information and can really show some interesting KDE activities, slides and things and talk about it. I plan to do that, but not right yet. But anyway, we'll go on with the our review. But I did think those desktops, just naming them, I thought that was a nice touch.
Yes.
I've not seen that before. However, two of the launcher menu categories retain their Russian language entries because when you boot, you do have the choice of using Russian or using English. So Anyway, one of the categories that retained its Russian language was the power category for restart shutdown. So it's a good thing the pictures were available. Menu pictures came in very handy at this point. Now, the install process. Agilia gives you the option to select the desktop or window manager you want installed. And I've got a picture of this, and it was very nice because there were six options. You had KDE, GNOME, LXDE, OpenBox, Fluxbox, and what was the fifth? There's a sixth one. I can't remember. I don't know why I'm looking at you, Matt, because you don't know either. But anyway, the link to it will be on the to the picture will be on the website. But I really like that because you could then select, and that's why it's 3 gigabytes because it's got all of them on there. But from what I could tell, you couldn't install more than one. I mean, you just had to select one, and then you went with it. There are a couple of other items to note. Agilia Linux detected my NVIDIA card and provided me with the option to use the proprietary NVIDIA drivers during one install. And because as I said earlier, I installed it more than once just to check the various desktops. I selected the NVIDIA driver but was unable to complete the install. It crashed. I'm not sure whether it was just where I had to go to get those drivers, if there was a problem at the server side of it, but I could never really complete that install.
Hmm.
I had no problem completing it with the open source drivers, so I'm not sure what went wrong there, but I had a little bit of a problem. And Agilia also allows you to walk through the install setup, because you know how it is before you really press the button to install, as you make all those selections and decisions. you have the ability to save all of them for later. So you can go ahead and make your selections and then save that configuration for later and then execute it as an install. So I thought that was kind of interesting. I didn't try it, but it was interesting. You know, even though Agilia presents your decisions to you on the screen, it also requests that you confirm everything's okay. So you got to check a box. It's kind of like a EULA where you just have to accept or decline.
Yeah.
If you don't accept it, then you can't press the button.
CentOS does that at the okay. beginning. You have to accept the GNU general public license to move on.
Okay, yeah, so I thought that was kind of interesting. I hadn't seen that too many times, and you know, I reviewed a lot of distros. I had a stack of disks, I think about four or five inches high. I just threw them all out. I don't know what I should have done with them. It's probably not a good thing to do.
I do that too. I mean, there's got to be a better way, but
so if anybody's listening,
I download a distro, install it, burn it to a CD, install it, mess around. And then I've got this disc laying around now that I just wind up throwing away.
Yeah, there's got to be a better way. But anyway, now onto the installed environment. Now, anyone who's used Fluxbox knows that it's a low resources window manager. And Agilia sets it up with a Conky-like system monitoring display on the right, and then, of course, the little panel on the bottom. Now, to access the Fluxbox menus, of course, those of you who have used it, you know, you can right-click anywhere on the screen, and you've got access to the menus. I personally am not a big fan of Fluxbox, but that's only because I've got 4 gigs of RAM, and I might as well use them, and I do.
Yeah, yeah.
But for people who don't have a lot of RAM or a low-resource computer, it certainly makes sense to use it. I mentioned earlier I reinstalled with KDE, as I said, because I don't want to let 4 gigs of RAM go to waste. Now KDE, of course, the KDE install version was its regular self, but the install included a few tools and programs with which I was not familiar because they are not installed by default in Kubuntu, and we're going to take a look at a couple of those in a minute because I'm moving on now to the interesting programs that I found. The first one that I noted was the Disk Utility Program. Now, what I found so interesting and fun about this, did we talk about this earlier, or was it before the show started?
Before the show started.
Yeah, that's right. And we're going to talk about it a little bit now. What is so interesting about this, and this particular utility was originally developed by Red Hat. So there's that Red Hat goodness there. And again, it was in the one I took a look at was in the GNOME desktop. But it's like a dashboard because it's got it allows you then to monitor the smart features of your disk if your disk has those available. But in addition to that, it also allows you to do things. You can press a link to partition. You can it lays out your whole drive there, all the partitions, so you can click on them and see individually what's going on with each one of them. I thought it was really great, and I thought, boy, is there something like this in my Debian-based distro, Kubuntu? So I went in and actually discovering that tool did take me on that journey, and I ended up installing SmartMon Tools, which is a package from the Kubuntu repository, but it's going to also be in Ubuntu. It's going to no doubt be
in
Debian.
Everywhere.
Yeah,
it's exactly. everywhere.
And that was, now this package contains two little apps in there. It's, there's Smart Control or Smart CTL, and then Smart D, which is the daemon that runs in the background and, you know, generates this stuff. So anyway, but I also installed G Smart Control, which puts a GUI front end on there because you can run it. You know, as you and I discussed, Matt, you can run it from the command line, and I did try that.
Yeah, because at work we do it all from the command line because it's all on servers and there's no graphical interface at all anyway.
And it works great. You can, as you indicated, just pipe it to a file, take a look at it, and evaluate. You know, the readings, or you can just scroll. If you don't do that, you can just scroll up your
redirect.
Oh, exactly, for the length of it. You're right. But you do have various options you can invoke as part of that, right, too. So anyway, but I wanted to share that. I've got a link to the SmartMon tools for Debian and Ubuntu in the show notes. Another thing they had there was, and again, I'm not sure how to pronounce this, but it's KCHM Viewer, which allows you to view help files. You know, I think the Microsoft help files, they have that CHM extension.
Yeah.
They embedded that extension name in this viewer, but it allows you just to view help files. So if you find a CHM file, you can use this just to view it. So I thought that was kind of helpful. Also, ZenMap, which of course is a front end to NMap. I went ahead and checked out my networks with it. It was kind of fun to do.
It's a graphical front end.
It was kind of cool. Cool to use. So
yeah, I've used it pretty extensively.
Two of my three routers were just locked down pretty tight. Didn't get anything from them. One just had port 80 open, which is probably the one I was using.
So with NMap, you have to specify a specific host. Does ZenMap do that, or does it search all hosts that's available?
It lets you specify a range.
You can
scan like a whole 24 if you want, or whatever, or 20 or 16 or a 28 or a 29.
Like /24 is what you're talking about? Okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it'll let you do a whole range or just an individual host. The graphical tool, you can do all that from the command line too with NMap. But ZenMap just makes it so easy with the graphical front end.
Yeah, and cool. I wasn't familiar with it, so I thought, wow, this is great because, it's just all laid out there in a nice, you know, nice kind of eye candy way for you. All right, so also was UGET, which is really a download manager tool. I've never used it, but it looked like, it kind of reminded
UGET. Is it a graphical front end for WGET?
I didn't really check into it that far.
Might be.
And then Sakura, which is a terminal utility, which was available in the GNOME from the live environment. So I saw that it looks like it's similar to the GNOME terminal, but uses less power. So you be the judge when it opens your root, at least in this version. There was also Cleopatra with a K. That was available in KDE. It's a certificate manager and universal crypto GUI. It supports managing the X509. And the open PGP certificates, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, I use Cleopatra to encrypt my password files.
Over. Yeah, so I've never used that. I've never used it. There also was Blogillo.
What?
Blogillo.
Blogillo?
I was called a Blogio, but I thought, no, there's an I between the G and the L. Blogillo. And that's a KDE blogging client that allows you to create posts in an HTML, and I did test it out a little bit. It's a visual style editor. You can
take a WYSIWYG.
Yeah, and they've got little tabs where you can see how it looks HTML. You can see how it looks just in your typical visual WYSIWYG. So that was kind of cool. I played around with that. There was also a little button in there that if you clicked it, you were supposed to be able to see it in the browser. And I was expecting that that Conker or
Firefox
or something was going to open up and just show this, or it would render in that browser, but that didn't seem to work. So I'm thinking maybe I didn't save it.
Because
or
I guarantee it's like Bluefish.
Okay.
You have to go in there first and tell it what browser to and put the command string in.
And I went in looking for that. That's what I thought too, but I couldn't seem to find a spot where you identified the browser that was your default browser. I thought it would just go in and find the default browser that as set up in KDE. But it didn't.
Well, I don't know. But Bluefish makes you put a command string in to start whatever browser you want to use.
How do you spell it, ZenMap?
ZenMap?
Yeah.
Think of... Okay.
It's not X. Were you using X?
Caro was trying to look it up.
Okay, ZenMap. Yeah, ZenMap.
Yeah, it's part of nmap.org.
Yeah.
Yeah, not surprising. But anyway, so that was Blogillo. Blagillo. Also in there, you know, it's kind of interesting because when I review these distros, sometimes I can tell what the person that built this or the team that built this, what their interests are, because there tends to be a preponderance of tools for that type of interest. And it seemed to me that photos and graphics seemed to be the interest of these guys because they're... they had a DNG converter. Now, this is a converter utility that was developed by Adobe to convert files that are from the RAW protocol. I mean, and that RAW protocol kind of covers various formats to convert them to DNG, which is, I think, a digital negative format. And it's a similar format to TIFF. So that was in there. There's some photo layout. There was a photo layouts tool. There's also an exposure blending tool, which uses the Kippy plugins to integrate with Digicam, which is coming out with 3.0 pretty soon. I think I mentioned that last week. There's the Pan Newsreader, which I thought was going to be like an RSS feed thing, but that's really for Usenet articles and that type of thing. So anyway, and then there's the Qt Designer Framework and other Qt developer tools. So I thought, yeah, you can tell what these guys like. Yeah. So that was in there. Now, my rating for Agilia Linux, because there is an end to this review, you guys. Agilia Linux is a serviceable distro, as serviceable as a bowl of borscht is tasty, washed down with a cup of Stoli. Stolichnaya vodka.
Do you really like borscht, Mary? Or are you just saying
no, I don't like beets. They taste like dirt.
No, I love beets. I hate borscht.
Well, I've never had it. I went to the Russian Tea Room in New York once, though.
And didn't have borscht?
I might have, but it was like 20 years ago. But I just wanted to say that. All right. I like the NVIDIA option. Even better if I could have gotten it to work for me. Because, you know, they just give you that option to select a proprietary driver or not. Not all distros
do. Did you select the proprietary driver?
I did on one of my installs.
And it didn't work?
It didn't seem to work for me. So.
Did you see that the Nouveau driver now supports 3D on all GeForce cards?
No.
It's not part of it. Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
I'm going to try that out.
Yeah. So okay. No longer when you update the kernel do you have to rebuild the NVIDIA
that's
driver.
Cool.
Oh, yeah. That's cool. One of the reasons why I went away from it.
Yeah.
So that is nice.
You get full 3D support on all GeForce cards with the Nouveau driver now.
Oh, that's fantastic. Okay. So anyway, you got work with me being able to select the six different desktops. I really like that option, too, so you could go ahead and install that. The menu translation on all tested desktops and the gray theme and GNOME took away from my enjoyment of the distro, but overall I gave it a 2.7. I mean, certainly serviceable. It's Russian.
You feel the English translation wasn't up to par and that's why you had some problems? Or?
Well... No, well, it was those two menu categories were in Russian. Unless you go in and go into the code and tweak that or something, they're just still Russian there. So yeah, it took away from it. And the GNOME theme was very gray. It was depressing.
Well,
it was like
Russian.
It was like a cloudy. That's what I said. It was like a cloudy Russian winter.
Right.
You weren't here for that, Tony. But anyway, so that's what I gave it as. So that's my review.
Cool. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Well, all
now we're
right.
Looking at each other. Okay, what's next?
What's next?
I think we're on to
I'm reading in the IRC channel. There's been a lot of chat going on during your review, Mary.
But no one was paying attention.
No, they were. Oh, okay. It's chat about your review.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. They're talking about Nmap. So, but Crayon also was wondering why we don't stream audio.
Yeah, why we use a video stream.
Video. And it's just because
it's easy. Yeah, that's what I told him.
Oh, it's easy. Because we're lazy.
But he said that we could use his server to stream audio. So hopefully throughout the week I'll get that set up so we can do that on the shows now on.
Oh, and so we can just have an audio stream.
Yeah.
Oh, that'd be cool.
But although he is, because he's using the YouTube downloader, DL, and he's streaming off of that on a AUG file now. So we are... streaming audio right now. So I posted that to our YouTube, so thank you, Crayon. But I think if I get our own computer set up to run for streaming, audio streaming, then I'll be able to tap into our regular mics and it'll get better quality for the audio.
Oh, yeah, because right now we use the snowball in the middle for the...
Right, yeah. Cool.
All right.
And Popey says that he says, don't worry, we were paying attention.
That's all right. I was just kind of scanning back, looking, looking at the chat that was going on that I missed out on. Because if I start looking at that, then I'll go off.
Right,
I'll fall off the tracks.
I'm the same way. Whenever I'm talking, I have to like cover the
Yeah, Poppy's IRC from, oh, he's from the UK, too.
Yeah, Poppy's from the UK.
Good.
Crayon, are you from the UK, too?
So.
Or I'm not sure where he's from.
I'm hoping to get to Scotland this year.
It's time for the tech news of the week.
News and views, because, you know, sometimes we slide in some opinions and views in it.
I only have two stories this week.
It's okay, Matt.
The first one is Google gives up injunctive release to any of its SEPs. When the FTC, the Federal Trade Commission, made their announcement on January 3rd regarding their two-year-long investigation into Google, the big news wasn't that they were not going to require any significant changes in Google's advertising practices. It was Google's agreement to not seek injunctive relief in regards to any of its SEPs, which stands for Standards Essential Patents. Almost no one even mentioned this fact, but I find it very telling. The major question discussed in both standards as well as regulatory circles to whether injunctive relief should be available where the defendant has agreed to negotiate for a license to an SEP, but claims the terms offered by the SEP's owner do not meet the FRAND, Fair, Reasonable, and Non-Discriminatory test. Since Google settled in this case, it leaves the legal aspect for injunctive relief unsettled.
Wow, I almost feel like I need to get a law degree for that one.
Yeah, it's pretty wild that they agreed to give up all injunctive relief for any of their SEPs, and they own a lot of SEPs. Mm-hmm. So. Mm-hmm.
Oh, thanks, Matt. That's interesting.
And next up, we then have, it's almost like they cut some kind of a deal to end the investigation. But then next up, we have TCP/IP rules for 30 years. On January 1st, 1983, what was then the precursor to the Internet, ARPANET, made the transition from the NCP Network Control Program Protocol to TCP/IP, the Transmission Control Protocol / Internet Protocol. How it was done could never be done today. They shut down every host on the network, made the switch, and then turned them back on.
It really? Never could be done today.
Change like that is called a flag day, because the first one, when they changed Multics' definition of ASCII 2, was scheduled for the U.S. holiday Flag Day on June 14th, 1966. Back then, there were only about 400 hosts on ARPANET. Today, there are tens of millions of hosts, which precludes any immediate protocol evolution. That's not necessarily a bad thing. It means stability and longer-term resilience for existing systems. This is what Vinton Cerf, co-creator of the TCP/IP, with Robert Kahn, said about it recently in a blog post. I can assure you, while we had high hopes, we did not dare to assume that the Internet would turn into the worldwide platform it has become.
Yeah.
And I have a signed t-shirt from Vinton Cerf.
Really? Mm,
yeah. It says, IP, and then it's over everything.
That's funny.
So that's all the stories I have this week, but there's some different articles I want to talk about too.
Yeah.
The first one up is not really an article, but it's a nifty little utility I found called gRSync, which is a graphical interface for rsync.
I know, yeah. We talked a little bit about this before the show,
right.
The fact that I had found the same one.
Yeah, I know.
And so it is.
It's phenomenal tool. It puts all the power of rsync into a graphical interface that's simple to use. rsync is a great tool, but it's kind of complex and arcane. You got to use different switches. Do you want to delete the files that have been deleted from the other server? Do you want to keep them? You know, and what time do you want it to run and all this? And they have taken it all and just made such an easy to use graphical interface, because I've been using rsync for a long time by itself, and this is just makes life so much easier.
So cool. Tony, okay, now you hear Matt over there waxing giddy about a graphical user interface. You know, didn't I just want to, it seems to me a week or two ago, I wanted to remember something about automating something. Because I knew it would come in handy, and little did I know that it would come in handy so quickly.
So quickly, yeah.
Okay, Matt, I'm just giving you a hard time. No, you're right. You're right.
Yeah.
That tool is... I tested it yesterday.
Anybody can use rsync now. Anybody.
Yes.
It's great.
That's cool.
Yes, and you can set it up. I tested it on my workstation at home, because I had two directories that were separate, and I said, I want to take this directory, and I want to back it up to this inside this other directory. So I identified my source and my destination. I put there were a couple of other options that I used in addition to that, and then I just clicked the button, and boom, it went.
Well, what makes
and there's some advanced options you can click.
Well,
we're excited about this,
because
aren't we?
I was thinking about this and playing with it. You can make a backup server solution with this so easily, because it lets you do it across the network too. You can give it IP addresses as your destination, and it's fantastic.
Yeah. I mean, I just did it on the same machine just to do a quick test.
That is cool.
Really cool.
When with IP addresses, is that going across SSH, or is there? Can you set what you want to use?
I didn't look at that.
Because if you can use SSH, then you can go across the internet and do backups.
Yes.
Like if you do, because I know a lot of people
use some type of secure method.
And I know a lot of people use the SSH method with rsync to back up config files from all their servers.
I think it does use SSH, because when we do it at work, you have to make SSH work first.
Yeah. Okay.
So.
And
that's using regular rsync with the arcane command.
Yeah. Really? You guys use it at work?
Yeah.
Because is that to do your...
To do rsyncs. When the hard drives in a machine are failing and we need to replace them, we first rsync the drives to new drives.
Because
then replace them.
That surprises me, because I would think if you're doing over SSH, it puts a lot of overhead with encryption. I would think you guys would do it straight to an NSF or something.
Because we're across the live internet.
Oh, you're going across the internet to do that?
Yeah.
Oh, I thought you did it just within like a little local network
that
you're at.
Oh, okay. Oh, then that makes sense.
Yeah, that does make much more sense.
Okay. All right, what else, Matt?
Oh, and there's a new independent movie out called Software Wars, about open source software and how it's taken over, and it's defeating closed source software.
Has it been released, or is this
it's
what
not
they want
to make? It's an Indiegogo project right now. They need $150,000 to finish it. But it's got
how
some
how close are they
last time I checked they were very far away. But they've got in the trailer for it, they've got some really great interview snippets, and one of them's from Linus, and he's really taken Apple to task in it.
Yeah, you know, the thing about those projects is that if the project doesn't make its goal, then anybody who contributed gets their money back. I mean, it's not like...
Well, they don't take it until the project...
Yeah, exactly. It's not taken until... That's a good way to put it, yeah. So, that's interesting. I'll check that out. You know, I was a backer on one Indiegogo project for Caden Live, and I think that was last year, so I was very happy to... participate in that.
Cool.
Yeah.
And last up, this is not Linux related, but it is hilarious, and the link will be in the show notes. It is the best rant against Windows 8 ever. He makes very cogent points in a humorous way. It's a video, and Stick Figure Man is in there, and it's very funny, but it's very, very cogent about how he says that Windows 8 is unusable as a production tool.
Really?
You just can't use it, because the operating system does stuff and you can't figure out why. Like, there's one example. The weather app kept starting on him and he couldn't figure out why. Why is this weather app keeping... And he couldn't figure out how to turn it off, because it's not a window. It's that Metro interface, and bam, it's full screen. You know? And what he finally figured out was it was the touchpad. When you swipe your finger across on a touchscreen, you're changing apps.
Oh, okay.
But
sure.
When you're doing it on the touchpad, you're just moving the cursor.
Well,
and it doesn't matter on the touchpad whether you're going all the way from the left or from the middle or from close to the right. That motion is the same motion, and it kept starting that weather app, and it took him a long time to figure that out.
Wow.
Oh, because that's not intuitive at all.
No, not at all.
Well, and it's funny, because I listened to a review of Windows 8, and they were talking about the fact that when you are rolling your scroll wheel on your mouse, you expect things to go up and down, but in Metro it was going left because it's touch related,
right.
You know, because when you're
it's going left to right,
so you know, it's just they just.
Whoever
tried to put
whoever
too much
designed
into
it. And there's no key, there's no tag with a key on it, on the machine. How do you do a reinstall?
Oh,
Okay. Well, we're gonna move on.
Yeah.
From that mess.
Yeah, that's a horrible.
So is
mess.
That your? Those are your.
And thank God it's a horrible mess.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. Are you done?
Yes, I am finished. Thank you, Mary.
All right. Well, I've got a few things. And this is from the How Does That Shoe Fit on Your Other Foot department. Well, we have Microsoft complaining that Google is refusing to allow Windows Phone users to have the same access to YouTube that Android and Apple customers enjoy. The functionality that Microsoft claims is missing includes the opportunity to search by category and to add a rating to videos. Microsoft claims that the missing functionality degrades the user experience. Well, it probably does. But essentially, the YouTube app is available to Windows Phone users, or as it's available, is just simply the YouTube website inside a browser. Now, my take on this whole thing, because this there's a link. This article was from the Register, the UK's tech site, one of the UK's tech sites. But my take on it is, boo-hoo, Microsoft. Sorry, the shoe isn't fitting your other foot that well. I think back to your Silverlight web app framework and its incompatibility with Linux, rendering some websites unviewable and unavailable to me. All I saw when I went to those sites was a white page, nothing else. And don't say Moonlight or Mono, because you click it, say install Silverlight, you click it, and it take you to the Moonlight site, you install it, and still nothing. Those two replacements were always a version or two behind and did not fix the problem. So wear that shoe, Microsoft, and tell us how it fits. Now, the previous comment was my opinion and does not necessarily reflect the opinion of Sunday Morning Linux Review.
Yes,
or
it
maybe,
does.
Or maybe
yes,
it does.
It does.
Yes, so I want to say that. So I've got a link. I've got a link to the Register article, and then I've got a link to the site that I could never get to come up. It was a full Silverlight site. Never would come up for me. So I've got that link, and if anybody can make it work,
more
let me
power
know.
To you.
Yeah, let me know. There's another article that I thought was kind of interesting called The Six Factors for That Can Make or Break an Open Source Business. Now, this particular article was from a site called VentureBeat, and some of the things they talked about was open source will not make bad technology great. Makes sense to me. So they talked about that. The other thing too is you can't just expect a community to emerge, because you know those kinds of things take
take
nurturing, and there's got to be a buzz and some excitement.
Red Hat's very good at that, building a community around different projects. And believe it or not, you got to give Ubuntu props; they're good at it too.
They do.
They develop communities very well.
Yeah, I appreciate you saying that, because I mean it is true they do. The other thing is give people a good reason to pay. I look at myself and some of the applications I've used that I have loved so much, like Handbrake. Now, I take my DVDs and I rip them to a file, and so that I can take them on one of those little micro cards we talked about and take them with me on my tablet. I should go back and see if there's a donation button, because I don't mind paying for rewarding people for their work and effort. I really don't. I just think it's the proper thing to do.
And with open source, a lot of times the model's different. You're not you don't pay for the software. You've got to buy the support.
Yes, and I don't mind doing that either.
Right, and because like we at work, we use CentOS instead of Red Hat, so we don't pay Red Hat for any support, but we then have to hire the personnel that know how to support it. So there's a trade-off there. Do you pay? Do you pay
Red Hat directly, or do you pay them indirectly because of the trained?
Right. Exactly.
Red Hat certified engineer.
Right.
Good point. They said have a commercial-friendly open-source license, and then don't penalize open-source customers who go proprietary. And then finally, inbound lead volume is key, because you got to have that pipeline. You know, you got to have that pipeline full. So anyway, I thought that article was kind of interesting, and I'll include a link to that. And then another one here, and this article came from also from the Register. I kind of hit the Register and found a couple of things here. This one here is, the Linux tablet is the future, and it always will be. Now, there's a recent article in the Register tech site that begins with that startling comment. The year of the Linux tablet is like the year of the Linux desktop, destined never to arrive. And it goes on to say that the Linux tablet market will always cling to a small percentage of the overall market. Personally, I want to think that this prediction is not the case. It seems to me that flexibility is a part of the equation as much as reliability. Now, the article goes on to say, for most, the dream of a Linux tablet simply means running a distro like Ubuntu, Mint, or Fedora on some sort of tablet hardware. Well, what's wrong with that? I mean, my comment is, what's wrong with that? It's all about flexibility and versatility, and to me, Linux is squarely in that court. There are times when I want my tablet to behave more like a laptop or a workstation, where I can, when I have work to do that requires, you know, I'm a touch typist and I want to be able to type fast. And a tablet, if you're going to be typing on that screen, you're just not going to be able to do it like that. Not at all.
Yeah.
And there are times when I want my tablet is perfect as a tablet. A touchscreen, mobility, browse, watch movies, that type of thing. So the perfect device is a tablet that can plug in a keyboard or at least give you that both kinds of flexibility.
A tablet is not a productive device.
Not.
They're not for production work.
It isn't.
You know.
I agree. And I was in a meeting a couple weeks ago, and one of the guy running the meeting had a tablet. I think it was an iPad. And that's, he was doing like this, trying to type and take notes. And I could obviously see it was taking much longer than what it would if he had a regular laptop and just type it out.
Yeah, and so I'm taking this now to Android, because Android, as much as I like it, I think it places limits on how you interact with it. And so I think that's because of its origins as a phone OS. You know, for the small screen. Now it's gone to the big screen, and yeah, I mean, there's some other things there, but I think it has some limitations based on that. Now, the fact that if you've got a full Linux distro, again, that's sensitive to the fact that it's on a tablet and gives you some functionality like that, but also gives you the control that a full distro has. I just think that's the best of both worlds, and I'm hoping that Linux on tablets will be that, because you look at Ubuntu, and I know, Matt, you're not a fan of it, but you know, they've got the buttons on the left, there's just some nice things that can be done there.
Yeah, but you know what?
What?
Fedora and KDE, I don't know about Fedora, but KDE has the same thing. They have
Plasma.
They have a netbook interface.
Yes. But you can run on your
Yes. Mm-hmm. Would be useless, but you could run it.
And I've played around with it. But yeah, I'll go back to my regular.
Okay. Is it a netbook or is it a tablet?
No, it's netbook.
Okay.
It's called netbook.
It's called netbook, but it is for a tablet. Mm-hmm. And it's touchscreen oriented.
Okay.
And
I touched my screen, but nothing happened.
And but they didn't F with the regular UI.
Yeah.
And that's what I, know, there was no reason to F up the regular UI with Unity.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
For everybody.
Well, anyway, there'll be a link to that. Another quick comment: phone makers seek alternative to Android. I don't know if you saw that. CBS News website had that.
I did not see that.
Yeah, they had that. Now you think about it. Samsung is one of the biggest phone manufacturers, so they want to get away from Android. But the thing of it is you think about Android and you think about YouTube, you think about Google Maps, you think about all. Look at Apple. What happened? They go away from Google Maps and they're back
in
the fold.
They were driving people in the ocean.
Australia. Exactly.
You know what was released this week?
What?
Was Ubuntu Phone.
Oh, you know, that's right.
So
everybody's talked about it, I think. But, oh.
I wonder if that would be anything that they'd be looking at.
Oh.
You know, somebody told me.
I've seen videos on it. It looks really cool.
It does look good. It looks really good. But what someone told me, it was meant to run beside Android. And I said, I don't think so.
I think it's possible to do it that way, but
and
you can also
they
run
said,
it by itself.
You said beside, you're talking about like a dual boot kind of thing? Or
kind of. Okay. When your phone is a phone, it would be running Android.
Yeah.
But when you then hooked it up to a keyboard or a monitor it would recognize that you did that and then switch over to the Ubuntu.
From what I saw, it's all Ubuntu.
Yeah. So
I think their initial
me too.
I think maybe a year ago they had that. Where you could run Ubuntu as the desktop with your phone, and so it'd be Android running all the time, and then when you hook it up to your desktop, then you'd have the Ubuntu desktop.
Right.
But with their new release, it's all Ubuntu.
Okay.
Yeah, because I thought he was just wrong. So.
Yeah, so there'll be a link to that. They talk about that. Yeah, you may want to do that, and you know, maybe is Google going to have issues then, you know, with Android? But again, Google's got other products there that are some pretty hefty products. Go ahead.
On here, Popey's talking about it, and he says that what I was just saying, that it's two different
two different
products. There's Ubuntu for Android, and then there's Ubuntu for phones.
Yeah, I figured everybody else talked about it already, so I didn't even. I completely forgot about it. I mean, when it came out on Wednesday, whenever it was, I think they announced it. I was, okay, that's what it is. And so then I heard everybody, any podcast that went out this week, I thought, okay. Everything's been talked about, so I'm on to something else. And speaking of that, I'm on to the KDE corner. I've got a couple of things. You know, this week KDE shipped the January updates to the Plasma workspaces, applications, and platforms. So 4.9.5 is on my workstation and my laptop. bug fixes, some translation updates. Also, they announced that there's going to be a two-week delay in Sympathy for Fedora. No, just kidding. I made that one up.
Yeah.
Anyway, there's going to be a two-week delay for the release of KDE 4.10.
Oh, no?
Yeah, so it's instead of the January 23rd date, it's going to be February 6th. So we're going to have to push out our KDE release party.
All right, I guess
yeah.
so.
Yeah, so. And then the last thing I have from the KDE corner is a KDE app of the week. I think it's an app of the week. I'm going to call it that. And it's called Xansion. And really what it is...
Xansion?
Yeah. Yeah, does that... yeah, Z-A-N-S-H-I-N. You ever heard of it?
No.
All right, well, I'll tell you what it is. It is a... it's like a little... like your mind, it's like an extension to your mind to keep track of things. Now, you know, when you run the, when you hit Alt F, I think it's Alt F2 for KRunner.
Yes.
And you know, you ever typed to do in there?
No.
All right, type to do in there. What it does is it will then allow you to take that to do and it will, it's supposed to pipe it to a little productivity tool like, take out the milk or buy the, you know, don't forget to buy the milk.
It says the title of the app is called Remember the Milk.
That's it, Remember the Milk. I don't have it installed, so that's why I kind of, you know, dropped the ball on that. But yeah. But anyway, so from the site, and I'm going to install it here, it is supposed to take that and automatically pipe it to the Xansion list. And you can build, you know, you can build a hierarchy of things that you've got to do, this type of thing. So I wanted to make people aware of that just to check it out and see if it's something they might find interesting. That's all the news I got.
Well, cool. Right.
Yeah. Well, I found a couple links, and one of them was the Steam Box. So it's a gaming console running Linux. And this looks really interesting because Steam's has released their engine in Linux and it's gotten done a lot of testing and people like it. But what I see interesting with this is that right now there's like two camps. There's the console gamers and then there's the PC gamers. And I can see this bringing them together where you can have a console on a TV playing PC games. So I think that's really cool.
Yeah, yeah. What I find cool is that Steam is actively porting games to Linux. It's just a good thing because for a lot of people that was the final barrier.
I've heard of it, but I just haven't really.
Well, I'm not a gamer. I don't yeah. play. I haven't used it. I don't install it. I haven't done anything with it.
I raise tucks around sometimes.
maybe play solitaire once in a while.
Okay.
But I always saw games as the final barrier to Linux adoption for a lot of people, because there's a lot of hardcore Linux people out there that still have Windows installs and Windows machines, and my boss at work is one of them. I mean, he runs Gentoo on his laptop, and,
sure.
but he his desktop at home is Windows-based for games.
Yeah.
And it's just the final barrier to total adoption for a lot of people.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I think this is really cool. And then also there is the sub-$300 Dell Vostro with Ubuntu on it.
Really?
So I thought that was really... Yeah, because I think it's good.
Long-term support model service one, 1204? Do you know offhand?
I believe so.
Okay,
I didn't,
yeah, it's fine.
I didn't pay attention. Usually...
How big is that laptop?
The specs here is it's the 14-inch desk with 1.7 dual-core processor, 2 gigs of RAM, 300 gig hard drive. So it's not a power machine, but for $300, what are you asking for?
Yeah.
You know?
And
reliability.
Well,
I'd be afraid to buy a cheap laptop.
I don't
Unless
know.
Unless I ran rSync all the time.
Although 2 years ago, if you saw those same specs, you wouldn't think it's unreliable.
No. It's all about, you know, failure, I guess. You know, I
there's
just,
not
I
failure worried. There, just, you know, low power.
No, I think it's great. Don't get me wrong. I think that's great. Whenever I see something, a deal that seems so good to be true, that I just think, ooh, how big is the hard drive on that?
320 gig.
Okay.
So I think it's pretty good for those specs. It's a sub
$300.
A great price. It's $299.
Okay.
But and it says you can upgrade it, and it ends up being $399 with
a monitor,
a Core i3 processor, and
oh, okay. All right.
So, yeah, it looks really cool. And both of those links are in the...
Thanks, Tony.
And it will be in the show notes.
To go shopping.
Yeah.
You know that Vostro, though? One of the guys at work has one of those Vostros, because we use Dell, all Dell equipment.
Yeah.
And when they his company laptop's a Vostro, the screen on it is too glossy.
Too glossy?
When you've got, like, a lot of direct lighting involved,
oh, okay.
You get a bad bad glare on it.
Oh, okay.
And I don't know if they fix that on these newer Vostros.
A little matte spray and... That's M-A-T-T-E. Not M-A-T.
Yeah.
We're talking about matte spraying, but anyway.
Moving on.
Yeah, I apologize. hey, speaking of, have you guys heard of Figlet?
Figlet.
I heard about it recently.
All right, Tony, swing around, take a look at my laptop. Now, I'm going to put a link to this in the show notes, but Figlet is this little utility that will take whatever you type in, and again, you tell it if you want script, what kind of font you want, and then I put Sunday Morning Linux Review, I put Figlet, space, dash F, space, script, space, and then what I want, and then it just types it right out like that.
Yeah, that's cool.
Yeah, it is. Now,
you have the script, and... Yeah, and then IRC Popey just says, yeah.
Yeah, he did it with Figlet, it looked like.
Or yeah. He says, toilet also fun.
Oh, yeah, exactly. That was just a recent article in Linux.com, I think. I'm going to just...
all this candy crap.
But that's command line.
Yeah, it's still candy.
Candy for the command line.
Yeah, so anyway, I wanted just a little something. There we go. Oh. So, anyway, I wanted to mention that. All right, coming up next...
Now it's time for Mary's quiz show. Is it alive?
All right, so is it alive or does X mark the spot where it died?
Oh, no.
Yeah, now you probably, it's not a twist week. During this segment of the show, I challenge Matt and Tony to identify whether a Linux, because you guys have not said that you're going to take this over yet.
No.
So I still continue to do it. It's easy for me because I don't have to think to identify whether a Linux distro is alive or dead. This week is straight up alive or dead, a teeny twist, but not much, is that the distro's names all end in X. Get it for Linux, but you know, it's again the name of the distro, and that's where X marks the spot.
We get it.
Okay. Well, I know, Matt, but you only had 2.5 hours worth of sleep last night, so I was worried about you. I just wanted to. All right, so our first one. Are you guys ready?
Yes.
All right,
it's called, I'm sure this is how it's pronounced, Artistics, or Artist X, but I think it's probably Artistics.
I'm going to go dead.
I say alive.
I think I remember this distro.
I remember hearing about it, so I'm thinking
it's alive. I do too, but I think it's dead.
All right, you ready? Is that your final answer?
That's our final answer.
All right, Artistics is an Ubuntu-based Linux distro, and it contains nearly all the available free audio, 2D, and 3D graphics and video software for the Linux computing platform. Yeah. So you know that's going to be about a 3 GB download. There'll be a link to it in the show notes. It doesn't need to be installed and boots directly from a running system without touching hard drives. Good luck with that video editing. But there'll be a link to it. So, well, Tony, you've leapt out to a lead here.
Ooh.
All right, the next one, Danix.
Dead.
Danix was a Knoppix-based desktop-oriented Linux live at one point CD designed with support for the Czech language. So that's dead, and you guys are right. All right, how about this one, Gentoox? That's Gen2X.
Right, dead.
I'm gonna say dead also.
Gentoox was an adaptation of the popular Linux distribution called Gentoo. It was compiled from stage one with full optimizations to run on a Microsoft Xbox game console. So that's where the Xbox X.
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, you guys are neck and neck here. It's getting exciting. All right, the next one. Venenux Linux. Venenux GNU Linux.
Venenux.
Yes. I'll spell it for you. VENENUX.
I'm going to say alive.
Alive.
Venenux GNU Linux is a South American desktop distribution based on Debian GNU Linux. So yeah.
I knew it was alive, and that's why I was waiting to see what you answered.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, really? Okay. All right. It adheres strictly to the principles of free software as defined by the Free Software Foundation.
I said that
for you, Matt. All right. The next one is Server X Live. That's SRVRX Live. You know, it doesn't end in X. That's okay. It's got an X in it. I have to modify the title.
Server X. I'm going to say dead.
Is this the last one?
No. One more after this.
I'm going to go dead also.
Server X Live is, so you both are wrong, so you're still clinging to that, that lead. Is a simple and easy to install Debian-based secure system based on LampStack as well as NMP, you know, with Nginx. I'm not sure how that's pronounced. LAMP is so much easier. That's why I run Apache. Yeah.
LEMP.
Oh, it's LEMP?
Okay. Yeah, with an N LEMP. For Nginx.
No, with an E. Wait. They use an E.
Oh, LEMP? E. Okay.
LEMP. LEMP. Instead of LAMP.
Okay,
LAMP.
Gotcha. All right. Anyway. All right, the last one. All right, the last one is called Elastix.
No one's alive.
I gotta go dead because we gotta either tie it up or I gotta lose my two.
All right, Elastix is a Linux distribution that integrates the best tools available for asterisk-based private branch exchanges, PBXs. So.
Yeah, I knew it was alive, but I had to go dead. I knew it was alive. I knew that was an asterisk distribution.
Okay. All right, so that's pretty good. You won, is it? Is it 3-2? No. 4-2?
Something like
that. I lost by 2.
The notes are going to say...
I think it's 5-3.
Tony won by 2.
I think it's 5-3.
I thought I had 6 in here, though. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, I only missed one out of all of them.
Yeah.
You're
pretty good, Tony. So, and I didn't give him the answers, Matt. That was that one prank we did that one week.
Yeah. I know. But I should have went that one where we both said the wrong answer. I was kind of leaning the other way, but not enough to go against the grain before the last one.
Okay.
Should have went that.
Yeah. All right. So join us next episode for another edition of Is It Alive? All right.
I'm reading in the chat here. Popey says that there's a Bluetooth car scanner, Matt. So I wonder if that's something you could leave on your car all the time when you're driving, then have it Bluetooth straight to your phone, and then you could see all the stats as you're driving.
Maybe, but you really only want the error codes.
Yeah.
Well, you know how there's in the newer cars, there's like the smart, or that you have a computer right in there telling you the current gas mileage and the current,
right,
all those stats. Well, you could have that running with your own carputer, running through the Bluetooth device.
I guess.
What is that, too much frills for you in your
car? Yeah, too much.
Well, your van's 96, right?
Yes, it is a 96.
So that would work with it.
Yes, it would.
It's listener feedback time.
And we have a listener feedback line. And that number is 313-626-9140.
Last week was kind of slim, so I'm happy to say we have two people that contacted us. One, Door.
Oh.
And we had
an email. I forgot about Door. I even deleted his email.
You read it and deleted it.
Don't tell him you're deleting his stuff.
He doesn't listen to the show.
But he apparently he does, because he emailed us about what we said on the show.
All right.
But whoops. He was asking whether USB media has to be formatted FAT32 or 16 or what. And I responded saying, depending on what you want to use.
Yeah.
Because
if you're just doing a regular install, like it's to a regular hard drive and you're installing grub and everything, it doesn't matter what it's formatted as.
Exactly. And a lot of the multi-boot ones... Matter,
it's got to be in a Linux format if you're doing that.
Exactly, but a lot of the multi-boot programs use FAT32, but he was referring back to Mary's problem she was having with
trying to get it to boot from Slacks, getting it to boot from the USB drive because
but you did the DD to it, right? Is that how you did it?
No, I think I've tried to follow their directions by installing it to the USB from the live environment, the ISO from the disk.
Oh, okay.
But I formatted it mostly EXT4, but I think I tried it once FAT. I think the first time I tried it was FAT32. I'm going to go back and retest that just to see, because that might have been the problem.
Yeah, usually the problem when it comes up like that is the
operator
in FDisk. Well, in FDisk, you have to set it as bootable. So most likely...
I did that.
Oh, you did.
I set it as bootable. Yes, I did. I made sure I set it as bootable. And that's why it was kind of peculiar to me.
Yeah, so. Okay.
Are you editing, or I'm going to not put my...
Oh, I'm in it here. I'm done with editing, okay. So I'll get out.
All right.
So
anyway...
But yeah, and then our other feedback was Walter.
Yes.
He was asking or telling us about how to disable secure boot, or how hard it is, and
mm-hmm.
that was one of the things they were talking about on the New Year's 24-hour broadcast, is they were talking about how a couple guys got a new laptop, and it had the secure boot, or the new UEFI on it, but I don't think it had secure boot. But he had to go through a couple hoops to get it to work right, and...
No, and the secure boot is going to be available.
That's why we've got to stop paying this Microsoft tax and buying equipment that has Windows pre-installed. We've just got to stop doing it.
Yes.
That's why we need to buy Za Reason and System76.
Yeah.
And they're not paying me, but that's why we have to start buying this stuff, so that we know. We have to start supporting people who support Linux,
mm-hmm.
period, bottom line. My next laptop, I normally buy used equipment. But my next laptop is going to be a new Za Reason, because mm-hmm. we've just got to start supporting
Tell
people
him Mary
who support
sent
Linux.
You. Tell him Mary loves her.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. And yeah, they're a little bit more expensive because they don't get the volume.
You know,
but not really.
For the quality you're getting, their base prices are right in line.
And Kathy Malmeros, who I believe is the CEO of Za Reason, had personally emailed me. Now, would Michael Dell ever do that?
No.
So there's a little, you know.
Now it said it came from her, but you know it didn't really come from her, right?
It might have. Come on, this is like finding out there's no Santa Claus. All right. Okay.
But he also included a link that goes how to disable the secure boot.
Yeah.
And then to be able to boot
to
Linux.
Yeah, the whole process of hitting F10 while you boot and then ignoring the warnings. I read that all on, I think it was Matthew Garrett's blog.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
This one was my libblog, is this guy's blog, and I'm not sure who it is. Jamie? Anyway.
All right.
Yeah.
So what else?
That's all we had for listener feedback that I noticed. I mean, we're getting a lot of stuff in the IRC chat, so cool. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, everybody. So I guess that means that we're going to start to talk about our outro music.
Featured music of the week.
You're gonna sing? I don't know. He's got a look. He's got that sheepish smile look on his face. Do you want me to take that over? You want me to just start sending?
I don't want. Sure. I mean, if you want to, I don't want to give you too much to and feel
because
that.
Because then I'll feel overloaded and I'll quit.
Right.
I feel that way every week, but here I am.
Yeah.
No, I'm kidding. I don't mind doing that because I, you know, again, I put in keywords like cowbell and accordion, and then, you know, we see what we get.
All right.
More cowbell.
I know.
Kink, 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 kink.
Yeah, so I put in interesting combinations because it takes me on a journey, a musical journey. So try to find something kind of interesting because the stuff I like is usually that techno-electronic music or new age music, and I realize that a lot of our listeners don't like that stuff. So.
Oh, well, you know what? I don't think that's a big... I don't think that should stop you. You know, if you find something, you know, just play it. Because this is kind of... I mean, I wanted to put this on here just to give people something to listen to outside
horizon.
Of their... Yeah, listen outside what they normally listen to.
And they can always skip it like I do.
Exactly.
Okay. All right. So, all right, good. So, so you're going to surprise us. So it's going to
be
like
a
surprise.
Yeah, right. It'll be in the show notes. But here we go. Listen up. All right, so you've been listening to the Sunday Morning Linux Review. This is episode 65.
Matt's new coffee maker or coffee table, we always say black rack slash coffee maker.
All right,
all right.
So. This is Tony Bemis,
Matt Enders,
and Mary Tomich
saying, "Have a good week. See you next week."